This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT Houston. Radio for peace.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Brian Levinka?
Something doesn't appear to be working correctly. We're not picking up anybody out of the studio.
Hear anything in my...
There we go.
Oh,
okay.
There we go.
Okay, try it again.
Hey. Oh. Try it again.
Our crack engineer.
This is Jack Falinski.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Glenn Holt.
And Brian Levinka.
And on the show tonight, we have coming up, actually, who is waiting on the phone at the very moment, John Wright of Dallas Voice. He'll be here to discuss GLBT issues in Dallas and in Texas. We have Colleen Fisher from the Bayou City Performing Arts to talk about something coming up, I suppose, some performance coming up. Julie Eberly and Paul Simmons of the Center for AIDS will be here to discuss their upcoming fundraising holiday event, Holiday Schmooze. And we also have, of course, This Way Out and News Wrap from This Way Out. So, without any further delay, let's go directly to John Wright from the Dallas Voice.
Good evening, John.
Hey, Jack, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. We've invited you on since you're one of, like, two full-time reporters in the state of Texas in the GLBT press.
That's right. We're a dying breed.
Well, and unfortunately, as we heard today, Tribune, which is the big conglomerate of radio, TV, and newspapers, just filed bankruptcy. So things aren't looking all that good even in the big media.
No, this is true. It's pretty scary.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit, since you sort of have an ear to the ground, of what's going on in both Dallas. I know we've had discussions about politics in Houston, and I think I probably bored you to death on those phone calls of what's going on here.
No, that's quite all right, and you're always very helpful with trying to find out what's going on down there, and I'm, you know, it's unfortunate that you all do not have something similar to The Voice to keep the community up to date.
Yeah, of course, we do have Outsmart Magazine, which is a great magazine, but it is not a weekly newspaper that covers news stories.
That's right.
It does do some good analysis. In fact, the new issue, and I didn't have a chance to read it yet, there's a really good story, it looks like, on the past election, sort of giving us analysis of it. But tell us what's happened up in Dallas and the Metroplex up there in the last elections.
Well, locally here, I think most in the LGBT community would say that we did quite well. Obviously, the headliner of all that was Sheriff Lupe Valdez, who was reelected to a second term, and as far as I know, remains the only lesbian Latina sheriff in the country, and the only female sheriff in the state of Texas at this time. So that was really the highlight, but obviously, you know, in terms of the state legislature and specifically the House, Democrats gained a couple seats and are now within just two seats of a majority. So that was viewed as a big victory here as well. You know, there's several other less high-profile races. But overall, I think on a local and state level, I think folks were fairly pleased.
That's great. Was there a demonstration over Proposition 8 in Dallas?
There was. On the 15th, there was a demonstration at City Hall. About 1,200 people were there for that. So pretty good turnout. And from what I understand, the largest, you know, LGBT equality demonstration in at least a couple decades since at least the late 1980s.
Yes, well, we're going to have a discussion here with one of the people who organized it here in Houston, and it was an incredible success of how they put it together. It was sort of organically, I would guess.
Yeah, it was very much a grassroots thing, although, you know, the existing groups certainly did get behind it in Dallas and join in the organizing effort, and many of the speakers at the rally in Dallas were, you know, were household names in the community, so to speak.
Are you going to have much of an effort of covering the upcoming legislative session?
We're going to do what we can. We've had, you know, a couple stories already, one specifically this week about some pro-equality bills that have been already pre-filed, and some that have just been drafted but not actually filed yet. So, you know, we don't have the resources or the staff to send someone down to Austin for the session, but we'll do what we can, and I have a feeling that it's going to be a very interesting year down there.
Yes, and, you know, I guess in the past session we were lucky to stop anything negative from coming out, which in the past couple sessions that has been an achievement.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the folks like Equality Texas have, you know, unfortunately, in recent years, have spent a good deal of their time worrying about playing defense.
Right.
But, you know, from what I hear, that may change this year. And, you know, I think there's a lot of expectation in the community now, given what's happened in the last several weeks, that, you know, that we accomplish something here in Texas and get some things in place statewide.
John, what is the status of the community up there? I know down here we're starting to see that a lot of our sort of mom and pop, or pop and pop, or stores, you know, bookstores have been closing down, and, you know, there's less of the bars. I mean, still some of them are doing, you know, seem to be doing okay, but there's less of them, and there's also sort of less of the businesses.
Yeah, there's, you know, Dallas, I would say, is in some ways in that same boat. We recently, Crossroads Market, which was a 30-year-old bookstore that began here in like 1980 or 81 and was really viewed as kind of the birthplace for gay rights in Dallas, unfortunately, just last week, as a matter of fact, closed.
Wow.
And there's a possibility, if not a probability, that it will not be reopening. There's a large renovation project going on in that area. And so, yeah, definitely seeing some of those same trends. You know, obviously the gentrification, the changing of the traditional, of Oak Lawn, which was the traditional gay neighborhood, is becoming, you know, more and more straight, frankly. You know, big high-rise condos going up, and you know, in many cases, gays and lesbians who are, you know, middle class, working class, being priced out in a lot of cases and forced to move elsewhere. So, yeah, absolutely. I think Dallas is no different in that sense, that there are major changes taking place. But you know, we still have a solid, gay strip, being Cedar Springs in Dallas, with, you know, the gay bars seem to be surviving. And there's now a merchants association that's made up of business owners along the strip that is doing some things to try to keep that area vibrant. So it's a mixed bag, I guess you could say. There's are definitely changes, but at the same time, some things, you know, haven't changed.
Well, and as I was mentioning before about the struggle of the Tribune Company, how's the Dallas Voice doing? I know you're a reporter and not in sales, but certainly sales reflects what the paper can do.
Absolutely, and you know, I can't really speak to our overall viability because I just don't know. But you know, I think, you know, the our readers are, well, probably the ones who read the paper religiously have noticed that our page count has gone down slightly over the last year or so. The paper's a little bit thinner. But, you know, know, that's not, that's every paper, and it's every, you know, the alternative weekly here in Dallas, the Observer, the Morning News, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, they're all down, and, you know, the whole industry is dealing with this. I think in many ways, actually, you know, we've been cushioned a little bit from that, given that we are weekly as opposed to daily, and also because we're an LGBT paper, and so we have kind of a, obviously a specialty market.
Are the younger people coming out to the community? You know, do they have more options that they feel that they may not need the bars as much as? And I don't know what your age is, but I'm in my 50s, and it seems here that they don't feel the need so much because they don't feel as they feel that they can go out with their straight friends.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure that is happening. I mean, I don't have firsthand knowledge of it necessarily, but I'm 33, about to be 34, and yeah, it is. It is very different for folks growing up today than it was for you or even me, and so that's certainly, you know, I think in terms of staying home from the bars, I think obviously the internet is a factor in that, just as the internet's been a factor in everything, including, as we mentioned, the decline of traditional print media.
And, you know, and I know you cover, how well do you all cover what's going on in the other cities in the Metroplex?
Oh, well, I guess that's kind of, depends on who you ask. we try, you know, we try, and it is a huge challenge. I mean, Houston is a bigger city than Dallas in terms of population within the city limits. But
yeah, but you're a bigger metropolitan area.
Yeah, exactly. We're the fourth largest metropolitan area. So if you take the six, I think they count the six surrounding counties, a ton of people and a ton of the land and space to cover, so there's a million things going on. It's tough to keep up with, but we really do our best, and you know, that's the reason that I know you, frankly, is that really statewide, try to keep track of at least the big stuff. You know, if there's something big that's going on down in Houston, we try to report it, because again, like you said, we're the only weekly paper in the state, and more people are coming to our website to find out what's going on, as opposed to picking up a hard copy of the paper. And so we would hope that folks in other places around the state will be going to our website and looking for Texas news.
Have you seen the film Milk?
I have.
And what is your reaction to it?
You know, I wasn't blown away in the sense of, wow, that was just an incredible movie, but I was very much struck by, you know, I thought it was certainly very good, but the thing that really struck me was just the timeliness of it. I mean, it, no pun intended, it couldn't have been scripted
right.
Any better in terms of, you know, Prop 8 passing and then this movie coming out. It's just, you know, exactly the type of stuff that Harvey Milk was dealing with at that time in San Francisco. It seems like, you know, history repeating itself, deja vu, what have you. And, you know, of course, the issue of these protests and demonstrations that are going on, and the debate about, you know, street-level activism versus, you know, the other types of activism. So very, I mean, you can't help but sit there in the movie theater watching that and not think to yourself, my God, is this, you know, not just perfect timing for this movie to come out?
Right. And did you get any reactions? Did you do a story on it about somebody who may have known Milk up there?
You know, I don't, it's a little embarrassing because I can't guarantee that we haven't.
I didn't mean to put you on a spot there, but it's interesting because R. Ray Hill, who actually said he was at a meeting with Harvey Milk in Dallas organizing the March on Washington in 1978.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, there's a few people down here. One of my best friends actually lived in San Francisco and knew Harvey Milk. And it's strange how sometimes how small of a world it is.
Absolutely, and obviously, I think the gentleman who wrote the screenplay was from San Antonio, right?
You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I'm sorry, but the guy who wrote the screenplay was from San Antonio. Harvey Milk was in Dallas in circa 1978. One of the longtime activists up here, Louise Young, told me a story recently about how he was here for a gay rights luncheon of some sort, and he was sitting next to this Dallas activist who asked him, you know, what can we do here in Dallas to increase turnout in the LGBT community? And Harvey's response was that they had these great posters that they were using, I guess, in San Francisco that said simply, vote as if your life depended on it. It does.
Wow, interesting, yeah.
And Harvey promised this Louise Young that he was going to send some of those posters to her when he got back, and he did, and she said that they were very effective and actually helped boost turnout in the LGBT community in Dallas that year. So real interesting little tidbit about Harvey Milk's life.
So what are some of the other stories you've been working on recently?
Oh, let's see. We've our HIV/AIDS food pantry up here was forced to move as a result of that same redevelopment project that closed the longtime bookstore. That's been a big story of the last couple of weeks. The there's a protest plan, Jack, for this weekend up in Plano,
wow.
And it's a protest outside a Cinemark theater. In Plano, which is where Cinemark is based, I'm sure you're aware of the ongoing boycott over the Cinemark CEO's contribution to the Yes on 8 campaign. And so there's that protest, which is interesting in particular because it appears as though the equality group in Collin County, which is where Plano is not formally endorsing the protest. So there's a little bit, again, of a conflict going on within the community about, you know, what is the appropriate strategy going forward in the wake of Prop 8. So that's why I think this protest in particular is interesting. Changes in the Republican Party up here. The new Republican Party chairman vows, county chairman is vowing in the wake of November 4th, that he's going to do more outreach to groups, including Log Cabin.
Do you have a Log Cabin group that's active up there?
We have an active Log Cabin group, yes, and they've made some inroads in the local GOP.
Good.
And it'll be interesting to see how that progresses because there's been a lot of back and forth between the Log Cabin folks and the Stonewall folks over the last several months. Stonewall folks essentially accusing Log Cabins of being sellouts for associating with some politicians who Stonewall folks view to be anti-gay. So there's been a real spat there within the community between those two groups, and it'll be interesting to see to what degree that continues and to what degree Log Cabin is able to make further inroads in the local GOP.
Does the Stonewall group up there endorse all Democrats?
Meaning not any Republicans?
Well, no, that's not the question. I'm in a general election. Would there be a case where they may not endorse a certain Democrat because they're not, you know, openly gay supportive?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, certainly they only support those who are willing. They do, you know, the surveys and questionnaires beforehand. And they will only support those who, you know, express support for the community.
And any other stories?
I'm trying to think of what else I'm working on right now, Jack, and I apologize to...
No, that's okay. I know I'm sort of putting you on the spot here, but I certainly appreciate it. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the Dallas Voice because it is such a great paper. You know, every time I'm up there, and actually I haven't been up there in a while, I do pick it up and because you do a good job of trying to cover the community.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate your inviting me to come on, and I hope you'll keep us posted on what's going on down there in Houston, so that we can do our best to report on it.
Well, absolutely. We're talking to John Wright, who is a reporter for the Dallas Voice, and I thank you for joining us this evening.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jack.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Torres.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 6, 2008. Among the numerous vigils, demonstrations, and other events marking the 20th annual World AIDS Day on December 1st, one of the most heartening for LGBT people must have been the participation by some brave openly gay men in a pre-AIDS Day march in the Haitian city of St. Mark on November 30th. It may be the first time self-identified gay people have participated in a public event in the Caribbean. About a dozen men wore T-shirts declaring, "I am gay and I am living with HIV." They were welcomed by march organizers. One of the country's most prominent AIDS activists said that they suffered double the stigma and double the discrimination. Socially conservative Haiti has one of the highest infection rates in the world. Gay men and lesbians face stigma and entrenched homophobia in the former French colony. The number of people with HIV has risen in every region of the world in the past 2 years, with the fastest increases being seen in East and Central Asia and in Eastern Europe. There were specific reports this week that infection rates among gay men in particular have risen sharply in China, the UK, and Israel.
Men who have sex with men in Africa are 9 times more likely to be HIV positive than their heterosexual counterparts. A coalition of groups including the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC, and representatives of 25 African LGBT and HIV/AIDS organizations issued a statement this week decrying the lack of access by LGBTI people to education, prevention, and treatment programs on the continent. At a pre-conference event in early December, before the start of the International Conference on AIDS and Sexually Transmitted Infections in Africa, held in Dakar, Senegal, their delegates condemned rampant human rights violations experienced by sexual minorities and vowed to lobby international donors, national HIV agencies, and African governments to act on their concerns. About 2 in 3 African countries outlaw consensual adult homosexual acts. Only 7 have included men who have sex with men in their national plans for HIV/AIDS prevention, and among those countries, only South Africa includes lesbians as part of its response to the pandemic. According to Fikile Vilakazi, director of the Coalition of African Lesbians, the gendered nature of the limited interventions aggravates the situation even further.
Notoriously homophobic Moscow Mayor Yuri Luzhkov, speaking at an AIDS conference in the Russian capital this week, said that he would continue to ban LGBT pride events in his city to prevent the spread of HIV/AIDS. "We have banned and will continue to forbid this propaganda by sexual minorities," he said, as it could turn out to be one of the factors in the spread of HIV infections. The 72-year-old Luzhkov, who's called pride events satanic, has fought against pro-LGBT public events in Moscow for the past several years.
But an unprecedented declaration against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity will be presented to the United Nations General Assembly later this month. The initiative follows a campaign by the Coordinating Committee of the International Day Against Homophobia, or IDAHO, which received support from the French government. All 27 countries of the European Union have signed the declaration, and efforts are ongoing to secure more signatories. Canada, New Zealand, Israel, Japan, Mexico, and about a half dozen South American countries have also signed on, as have Iceland and several European countries that are not part of the EU. Most notably absent as signatories are Australia and the United States. The Vatican this week announced its strong opposition to the anti-discrimination effort. While it doesn't have a vote in the UN, a Vatican spokesman noted that fewer than 50 of about 200 member states have endorsed the proposal and warned that those that haven't will be pilloried and made an object of pressure. Organizers say they hope to convince the General Assembly to pass a resolution calling for the decriminalization of homosexuality worldwide.
Meanwhile, Australia's Senate and House of Representatives passed legislation in late November that changes some 100 laws to give gay and lesbian couples equal rights. The changes, introduced by the Labour government of Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, extend spousal rights to same-gender de facto couples in areas such as health care, taxation, pensions, parenting, public benefits, workplace benefits, workers' compensation, veterans' affairs, elder care, and educational assistance. Australian federal law, however, defines marriage as exclusively heterosexual. LGBT activist groups generally cheered the new legislation, but some have criticized the lack of a grandfather clause, retroactivity, in the legislation. They say that elderly, long-term, same-gender couples who register under the new laws may lose pension income and other benefits, and could be prosecuted for fraud.
Elsewhere, Burundi's parliament in late November overwhelmingly voted to specifically outlaw gay sex as part of a package of more than 600 changes to the Central African nation's penal code. Progressives cheered the abolition of the death penalty in that package, but have condemned the criminalization of gay sex. According to Amnesty International, male-male sex was previously banned and punished in Burundi under laws governing immoral acts. The new measure specifically punishes consensual adult gay sex in the impoverished country, with a large fine and a jail term of between 3 months and 2 years. The president of the European Parliament's Intergroup on Gay and Lesbian Rights, Michael Cashman, discussed the matter with the European Commissioner for Development and Humanitarian Aid, Lewis Michael. Cashman told reporters that the commissioner was shocked to learn of this law and said he will travel to Burundi and discuss his concerns with the government. Executive Director Paula Edelbrick of the U.S.-based International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, IGLHRC, said that these laws are meant to silence and terrorize our community.
Conventional queer wisdom holds that one of the most welcoming cities in the world for LGBT people is Amsterdam. But the University of Amsterdam presented a study last week revealing a drastic increase in homophobic acts in the Dutch capital. Police received more than 150 reports of anti-gay violence there in the first half of 2008. That number is probably much higher because many incidents go unreported. It was the first time police made an effort to specifically keep track of anti-gay hate, which represented 10% of all reported bias-based incidents. Some 28% of homophobic attacks were physical assaults, with the remainder involving verbal abuse, threats, intimidation, or vandalism. A high percentage of the incidents took place in gay bar districts and other places where gay men congregate. Nearly all the victims were male. Immigrants were previously thought to be the major perpetrators of anti-gay incidents, but the study concluded that the attackers are usually young native-born Dutchmen between 17 and 25 years old, with little education, who come from dysfunctional families, feel insecure about their masculinity, and are highly impressionable. City officials plan a new anti-homophobia campaign and to encourage greater police visibility in predominantly gay areas. Victims of homophobic violence are also being urged to come forward to increase public awareness of the problem.
But in the U.S., a Florida circuit court in Miami has struck down a state law that barred lesbians and gay men from adopting. The court granted adoptions to a gay man represented by the American Civil Liberties Union, who with his partner has been raising two foster children, 4 and 8-year-old brothers, since 2004. Martin Gill, a North Miami resident, told reporters that he and his partner are extremely relieved that the court has recognized that it is wrong to deny our boys the legal protections and security that only come with adoption. The court ruled that the ban violated the equal protection guarantees of the state constitution because it irrationally singled out gay and lesbian people and their children for different treatment and denied children the right to permanency as mandated by federal and state law. The Florida measure barring gays and lesbians from adopting passed in 1977 as part of a homophobic crusade led by former Miss America runner-up Anita Bryant. Attempts since then to repeal the law in the state legislature have failed. The Florida Attorney General's office has said it will appeal the ruling.
And finally, several new activities are being planned by Join the Impact, the grassroots group that coordinated the huge November 15th protests against California's Proposition 8 and other bans on marriage equality. Those protests, driven mostly by online organizing, took place in some 300 cities in all 50 U.S. states. December 10th has been dubbed a Day Without a Gay. Among other things, Join the Impact urges all LGBT people not to spend any money on that day. Candlelight vigils around the country in malls or other shopping areas are planned for December 20th. Participants are urged to wear shirts that say second-class citizen. Join the Impact is calling for marches on the 50 state capitals on January 10th as a national protest against DOMA, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. The group says it wants to remind President-elect Barack Obama that he's promised to push for repeal of that law. DOMA bans federal recognition of same-gender couples, whether they're in state-sanctioned civil unions or domestic partnerships, or even those who've married in states where it's legal. And Join the Impact is calling for nationwide peaceful civil disobedience sit-ins on February 12th at marriage license bureaus. If you are denied a license, don't leave, the group says. Let's show this country just how many U.S. citizens are denied equal protections under the law. Change will not come if we sit back and do nothing, they say. Change comes through visibility, conversation, demonstration, and action. For updates and more information, log on to jointheimpact.com.
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 6th, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Torres.
Colleen Fisher from Bayou City Performing Arts is next on Queer Voices.
I intend to drop a bomb on my dear old dad and mom. For this year, without a doubt, is the Christmas I come out.
You're listening to some of the music from the Gay Men's Chorus past Christmas concerts, and let me tell you, if you haven't been to one of these concerts, it's one of the best of the year, and it gets you in the Christmas spirit. And again, in the studio we have the lovely Colleen Fisher here to talk about the next Christmas concert, holiday concert.
Yes.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. Good evening, everyone.
How are you this evening?
I'm actually doing fine, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I know you were on a couple of weeks ago, but... We got to push this concert.
Exactly. Definitely got to push holiday agendas at holiday time.
What song was that we were just listening to?
We were actually listening to the 12 Days, I believe, After Christmas. Remind me of it.
That's hilarious.
It's an awesome parody of the
original. And what was that?
Yeah, that was Coming Out at Christmas.
Coming Out at Christmas. I brought our Christmas album, A New Season Live, that we brought out.
And I promptly stole it.
Exactly. It has now been confiscated. We brought that out 2 years ago, and I just brought it in, and I was like, I'll play Christmas music roulette. Anything on here will be fine. So it was... We were wondering what would be played.
I still remember 2 years ago, the Jalapeno Chorus.
Yes, Jalapeno Chorus. That was actually before my time. Before so time. I want to say that had to have been... That almost could have been Jingle Jangle Jive, but it may have been... Was it at Wortham or Jones?
It was at Jones.
Okay, then...
No. It was at Wortham.
Okay. Then that probably would have been... Oh, I'm not even sure what concert that would have been.
So the concert coming up is at Jones Hall.
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. It is at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, December 16th.
So a week from tomorrow.
Yes, a week from tomorrow.
How are ticket sales?
Ticket sales are doing okay.
Okay, well, there's room for improvement.
It is always room for improvement. We can fit 2,100 people.
Man, I get emails all the time, like, oh, buy tickets.
Exactly. But the best thing is that we're having we've decided to have our own economic stimulus package this year, and that's for art stimulus packaging. And so we've got a great ticket offer that we're offering folks. It is, if you buy one ticket in tiers 2, 3, or 4, you get your second companion ticket for 50% off.
Okay, so tiers 2, 3, and 4 are like back orchestra and like mezzanine.
Yeah, actually, we reorchestrated the house this year. So instead of just doing the aisles all the way straight across, which Jones Hall is that continental seating, so you don't have aisles, so you have to kind of politely walk
push,
across.
Push your butt in front of people's
Exactly. But if you like the person that you're walking in front of, you know, you never know. You might get a phone number pushed in your pocket or something.
A Gay Men's Chorus concert.
Always a great place to check out people. But with the way the seating arrangement was, we used to have everything straight across. Well, we've decided to put things in sort of an inverted U shape.
Oh.
And so now you can sit in tier two in what used to be tier one seating last year and really kind of work your way down the edges of the house.
Oh, okay.
So, but yes, tiers 2, 3, and 4 are further back in the orchestra, but tier 3, the way we've restructured the house this year is actually straight along the balcony in the grand tier section. So second floor right on the very edge of the balcony, you can have tier 3 seating, which is some of the best pricing in the house.
Very good. So give our listeners something. What can they expect if they've never been to a holiday Gay Men's Chorus concert? And this is actually not just the chorus. It's the chorale is coming in?
It is, actually. And we're going to have two cameos. Both the Bayou City Women's Chorus and Bayou City Chorale will be performing that night, so which is really exciting.
Is it going to be campy and crazy like usual, or is it going to be a little bit more solemn?
It's going to be, you know what? The one thing that James always does and the artistic staff always does, they always put together a really varied holiday show. So you're going to get a little bit of the serious, but you're definitely going to have some of the fun and the campy. Actually, this year more than some of the other years, it's going to be a little less camp, but more, and I don't think that losing the camp is a bad thing, because we're bringing in some really show-stopping pieces. We're doing one called Stomp the Halls, which is based on the Broadway show, which we're really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing another piece. If any of you remember the Silent Monks in the Alleluia Chorus, they are making a fantastic return this year. They had brought down the house a couple of years back, and so they were asked for, and we decided to bring them back. And then we've got our first major choral commission piece called The Promise, which was written by the Roberts, Robert Seeley, and lyrics by Robert Espindola.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Seeley is, we've done several pieces by Robert Seeley, Naked Man, Metamorphosis.
I was at that one?
Yes. And so we have asked Robert to, we commissioned him to do this piece for us, and it's really beautiful. It's about a miracle at the holidays.
Now, where does the winter song title come from?
Actually, I was trying to brainstorm all of the titles for the season, and I knew that James was putting together a really varied holiday program. And the one thing that we always try to do with the holiday concert is touch on so many different holiday celebrations, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Christmas, Santa Claus, you know, all the secular and religious holiday touchstones that we can.
Right.
And so coming up with titles can sometimes get a little difficult, but there is actually a holiday song called Winter Song.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to iTunes and I just typed Christmas music, and all these different titles came up, and I was like, oh, I like that one. Let's try that. And it fit, and it just seems to work really well. So
Very good. Now, I'm reading in the ad in Outsmart.
Yes.
Page 27.
Thank you.
If you are so brazen and bold to go and look at your Outsmart right now, there's an ad. And it says something about a holiday food drive. Tell me.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
We have decided that in light of Hurricane Ike and everything that Houston has been through, what better way to celebrate and support our communities than to have a food drive and support those families. We actually heard the statistic that there is on average 200 to 300 families a day calling area, in almost each individual food bank asking for help and for food this holiday season. And so we will be collecting non-perishable items. Bring in your everything from your macaroni and cheese to those canned green beans and corn, which will always make a excellent holiday meal for a needy family. And we'll be collecting that outside the front doors at Jones Hall. And we are going to be giving that away to a great local food charity.
Are you going to be collecting money for that, too?
Yes, gift cards for Kroger's and H-E-B and all those wonderful grocery stores also make excellent gifts that will go wonderfully into those food baskets.
Very good. Now, tell us how our listeners can get tickets for this.
There's a couple of easy ways. You can call our offices at 713-521-7464. That's 713-521-SING. You can also go to our website at BayouCityPerformingArts.org. And once you log on to that website, you just look at the menus on the left, and it'll lead you straight into our purchasing in our online store. You can also, if you know any chorus members, any singing chorus members, you can definitely hook up with them, and they can either direct you to tickets. Most of them actually had to turn in all their consignment tickets today so we can have them ready to sell next week.
I could tell because I got all the emails like this weekend.
Yeah. Everybody's a big push.
Everybody's on Facebook like,
push, push, push. Yeah.
I could tell it's the push. The quota's coming up.
Exactly. But I have to say, the courses have been outstanding this year. They've done a yeoman's job of
You've got some new guys in there like that are doing very well.
Yeah, they're doing great. And the energy is really high. You know, I think we were all a little nervous in the middle of September. We weren't quite sure how things were going to pan out energy-wise. But I have to say, people are excited. This is going to be a great holiday time.
Now, this is your holiday concert. What other concerts do you have coming up?
In March, on St. Patrick's Day, Luck the Irish, we're going to be doing a show called Broadway Babies, which is going to be featuring some best of the Broadway belters, and that'll be the men's chorus singing.
I cannot wait.
It's going to be a great show, but the first half is actually going to feature Bayou City Corral singing The Old Turtle, which is based on the best-selling children's book. And we're going to be have a family-friendly program that night, so any families and children who want to attend the performance, you know, we're encouraging people to come.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got little kids who might need to head into bed a little early that night, you can certainly come. The program will start at 7:30, like all of our concerts, and you can actually have them at home and in bed by 8:30. So, and then in May, we're going to be presenting Africa with the Bayou City Women's Chorus, which is at our new venue, Unity Church.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and we just had our, the women brought the house down on Saturday.
Tell us about that.
The Africa concert is actually going to be African influence in music, so jazz and gospel.
Not just tribal drums.
No, but Caribbean music and African music. I mean, really just all those touchstones. Some of the reaches down into Latin America. I mean, really just African influence has hit so many different areas.
Right.
So that's going to be a fantastic show. We're going to be teaming up with some local African-American talent and putting together a great program. And then in June, we are commissioning our first major choral concert, our full concert, which is going to be called La Perla. And it's going to be featuring the best of Latin American and Hispanic music. So,
now, is that going to be around Pride time?
It is around Pride time, as a matter of fact. It's going to be Saturday, June 13th.
So like a week or two before Pride?
Yes. Yeah, we're getting in a little early this year, and hopefully there will be no Cyndi Laupers. Any of you HRC folks listening, no Cyndi Lauper.
I don't think they're planning that far ahead.
Okay, well.
I know last year it was hard because
it was tough. People had a tough choice to make.
Like, do I support the local community, or do I go hear Cyndi Lauper?
Well, exactly, and the comments that had come from Cindy's concert the year before, I mean, it was a tough choice for folks.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're talking to Colleen Fisher. We have a week from tomorrow a wonderful holiday concert coming up called Winter Song, and tickets are available online. Let's talk about prospective members. How can they? Can anybody join the chorus?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
What's the process?
It's pretty easy to sing in the chorus. You show up to open rehearsals. And so for this next concert cycle for Broadway Babies, open rehearsals will be all of the Mondays in January. And we rehearse at Covenant Church in the Museum District, which
that's
is
on
it,
Caroline?
Yeah, 4949 Caroline Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally right up the street from the Holocaust Museum. Can't miss it.
Okay.
And you just come on in and you talk to Mike and Roger, who sit at our membership table. And
they just sit out there.
They do. They just hang out, ready to say hi and make sure you're comfortable. And we've got Sam, who introduces himself. He's our mentoring chair. And so you meet up with Sam and some of the newer guys.
That's Sam Bird?
Sam Bird.
Yeah.
Yep. And we get you all set up and settled. And you do a vocal placement. There's no auditions. So everyone who wants to sing can sing.
What if you can't carry a tune? Because I've been told that I have no tune, I have no rhythm, I have no lyrical ability.
Well, you know what?
But I think I can sing.
Well, hey, you know, there's no harm in trying.
I would be very nervous.
If you can sing the part, then you can sing in the chorus. But there's also a lot of really great opportunities for folks who are good at dancing or...
No.
Yeah.
What's next?
Just production in general, working backstage, with different...
That's where the trolls and ugly people hang out, right?
We are not trolls.
No.
We like to wear black
You're talking about me.
The people that can't sing or dance just hide behind the backstage.
Well, let me tell you, there is nothing wrong with helping to support. And, I mean, we do bar crawls at JR's, usually in the weeks going up to the concert. We try to do karaoke nights at Guava Lamp. And so if you are just someone who really just likes to go out and be a very social
person.
It's not intimidating.
Well,
not when you have a good product to sell.
Well, for you.
Don't have to sing karaoke. You just have to go out and flirt and have fun.
I can do that.
Shove business cards in people's pockets.
I can promote
you can do
and
that.
Yeah, I'm all about that.
Come on. There's room for everyone.
Yes. But, you know, I get in the shower and I think, oh, you know, I sound pretty good. And then... Like, David will walk in and say, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Like, what are you trying to do? Quit singing.
Well, you know what? Everybody has a talent.
Exactly.
And, you know, we've had some people come in to the organization and really try. And they've actually gotten better. And they've become very valued members of the chorus.
Well, let me tell you this. When I first started going to the concerts a couple years ago, maybe 5 to 8 years ago, it was okay. But now it's, like, really good. I mean, it's the quality has improved. So
yeah.
I don't know if it's been James or the more talented people are coming in or there's more rehearsal time.
Well, I think the rehearsals they've changed to kind of meet the needs of the choruses. James is a fantastic director. He works really hard with the guys and the women both.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, the Gay Men's Chorus is celebrating their 30th anniversary this year. I mean, the Montrose Singers started singing at Mary's around the Christmas tree 30 years ago.
Wow.
And yeah, which is crazy. And so 30 years later, you've got a lot of guys that have been singing for a long time. Mm-hmm. And when you get guys that have been singing 8, 12 years, it really does add a flavor and a seasoning to the sound of the organization. And they're kind of used to it. They know how to roll with the punches.
Right.
They know what's going to be coming up. And then when you add the new guys in, you get their energy and their vitality. And it makes for a great mix of people.
I really enjoy the holiday concert because of the production values that go into it. I mean, it's always something unexpected. And you bring out your dancer and what have you, and it's just, I always enjoy that. So, to get back to what we're talking about, tell us, this concert's coming up when?
This concert is Winter Song. It happens on Tuesday, December 16th at Jones Hall in the Theater District, and the show starts at 7:30. Tickets will be on sale at the BCPA office at 713-521-7464. Again, that's 713-521-SING, or you can visit our website at www.BayouCityPerformingArts.org. And if you decide that you know, you need to wait and see how plans pan out for you, you can always walk up. The box office opens at 6:30, and you can come on into Jones and enjoy some dinner in the lobby. And
you know, gay men, they're always the last minute. It's like calling, like, what you doing tonight? Oh, concert. Okay.
Exactly, which is why we're going to try text messaging people to remind them about the show this year.
That's very Obama.
Exactly. Hey, you know what? He started some good stuff, and I think we all need to get on board.
And then also, this is also a food drive.
It is a food drive. Bring your non-perishable food items, and just to help some needy families, some gift cards to local grocery stores. All of that will go a long way in feeding some hungry families this season.
So it's a wonderful concert for a great cause with wonderful singers and a wonderful festive holiday time.
It is, and don't forget, we'll also be selling tickets for our holiday raffle to raise money for the organization. We've got a 32-inch flat panel television.
Gosh.
$500 in Shell gas cards and a BCPA Fanatic basket with all kinds of 30th anniversary Pearl themed items.
Well, you know, the $500 gas card doesn't go as far as it used to.
No.
Well, let me say that again. It goes further now.
It goes like twice as far as it did when we thought these were a great idea. So.
I know. I'm amazed by how much the gas
Unbelievable how gas has fallen.
Exactly.
So gas is not an issue for coming to this concert this year. Get on out and see a great show.
I mean, it's downtown. I mean, everybody's probably close to downtown.
Exactly. And there's some great places to eat and have fun and still keep it.
Make an evening of it.
And don't forget, we do have that buy one ticket, get the companion ticket 50% off. So you can get tickets for, you know, something that's reasonable for everyone and go out to dinner and, you know, have a great night out and still keep it easy on your pocketbook.
Exactly. And support the community.
Exactly.
All right, Colleen, anything else that our listeners should know?
No, other than I think this is going to be one concert where, you know, with everything that everyone's gone through, I think we all need a little Christmas. We all need a little holiday. We all need a way to lighten up and just enjoy the best of the holiday season. And certainly the men's chorus and the women, they've been working really hard. They've been working on this music since September. And in light of everything, they are sounding absolutely fantastic and beautiful. And we would love to have you there that night.
So please join us next Tuesday for Winter Song.
Thank you.
Thank you, Colleen.
Queer Voices. Montana,
they made no grand parade. No hooded knights on horseback, no banners boldly raised. Hate mail and bomb threats, midnight telephone calls, white power swastikas spray painted on the walls. Five-year-old Isaac woke screaming in the gloom. Mommy, there's a man at my window, looking into my room. Son, there's nothing out there but shadows branches make. The little boy went back to sleep, his parents lay awake. For Isaac's bedroom window showed their faith for all to see. The candles of the menorah stood for hope and memory. The next night out of the darkness, a cinder block was heard. Isaac's window and the boundaries of his world.
One moment of conviction, now one voice, wise and clear, one act of compassion, it all begins here.
No safety now in silence, we've got to stand our ground. No hate, no violence, not in our town. Pop was not unfriendly. He said, ma'am, if I were you, I'd take down that menorah, the Star of David too. Isaac's mother, Tammy, said, I'm sure that's good advice, but how then could I ever look my children in the eye? When at the doorway a little girl did stand, a gift for her schoolmate in her outstretched hand, a menorah drawn in crayon from a Gentile to a Jew. It said to Isaac from Rebecca, I'm sorry this happened to you. Have you seen the paper? Did you hear the news? What kind of people are we? We thought we knew. And children, pride and prejudice, in peace together dwell. If we look through this shattered glass, do we see ourselves? Margaret MacDonald called her pastor on the phone. This time the Jews will not face their foes alone. We'll make paper menorahs, display them from our homes. We'll show the bigots there are more of us than they have stones.
The bigots.
Shopkeepers printed up menorahs by the score. Children in their Sunday schools color dozens more. Though in the town of Billings live not 100 Jews, menorahs now are everywhere on every avenue. Through the drifting snow, Tammy drove her children round. Menorahs by the thousands in the windows of the town. Are all those people Jewish? Asked Isaac as they went. No, his mother answered. They are your friends.
One moment of conviction, now one voice, wide and clear. One act of compassion, it all begins here.
No safety now in silence, we've got to stand our ground. No hate, no violence, not in our town. Not in our town. One simple lash of compassion, it all begins here. No safety now in silence, we've got to stand our ground. Not in our town. Not in our town.
In our town.
That was the Bayou City Arts performing live. And that particular song was called Not in Our Town, A Story of Hanukkah. The soloist there was Fred Small. Now, again, the Bayou City Performing Arts will be performing at Jones Hall next Tuesday at 7:30. And tickets are available at the door if you don't make your reservations ahead of time or if you don't know what your plans are ahead of time. Before the selection that I played just there called The Story of Hanukkah, before that was Coming Out at Christmas. And that was the piece of music that we used in the interview with Colleen Fisher. And again, that was Bayou City Performing Arts.
Friends, have you been partying like a holiday rock star? Making the scene at the office party, the neighborhood progressive dinner, your friend's party, your party with your girlfriend? Do you need something to relieve the party pain? Then ask yourself, can you pass the antacid test? The test occurs Saturday, December 20th, Dan Electro's Guitar Bar, 1031 East 24th Street, just off North Main and south of the North Loop. The antacid test is a Jerry Christmas 2, a celebration of the music of the Grateful Dead, Garcia, and Inspired Jam. The antacid test is a 90.1 KPFT Houston benefit concert, the cure for other holiday parties. Music will be provided by Plump, the Hightailers, Guy Schwartz, Star Jernigan, Third Ear, the Psychedelos, and many others. Nonstop relief begins at 5 p.m. The door fee is a donation to the station. The relief provided is what you need. See you Saturday, December 20th at the antacid test. It's a Dead Air production, so what could go wrong? You really want a second opinion? Then take it from these guys.
We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas and a happy Bob Weir.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
One of the great organizations in our community that does a lot is the Center for AIDS. I'm personally involved, and I thought I would bring Paul Simmons, the co-executive director of programs for the center, to come on and talk a little bit about that and what the center does. So, Paul, what's going on?
Well, the center is a 501c3 nonprofit that is supported mostly by private philanthropy, most of that actually from individual contributions. We, next Thursday, have our largest annual fundraiser coming up, the annual Schmooze, and that'll be held in the home of John and Becca Thrash.
Yeah, we're going to have the wonderful Julie Eberle call in. Hopefully she's out there dialing in as we speak. We'll have her talk about that because this is her baby, and she's put a lot of effort into that. But I wanted you to kind of give our listeners a little background on what the CFA does and kind of what the mission is.
So we do two things. Locally, we provide treatment and health education to people who are HIV infected, and we do that in a number of ways. We do that through our information center, which is at 1407 Hawthorne, where people can come and get printed material. They can talk to the staff. We have a whole series of publications that are online at www.centerforaids.org. And we also do presentations in the community, including what we call conversations, and we do health summits for a variety of different demographic groups. And then nationally, we advocate for research in HIV, and we do that principally through the AIDS Clinical Trials Group, which is a federally funded consortium, and it's the world's largest HIV clinical research network.
Very good. So basically just the information kind of guardian and kind of advocate for not only Houston but the United States and around the world due to the internet.
Well, right. So the research agenda is set for everyone nationally and internationally, and we do try to influence and inform that.
It's a wonderful organization, but as all nonprofits exist, live and die by raising money.
That's right.
And the Center for AIDS has, as you said earlier, a large fundraiser this Thursday. And we have the delightful Julie Eberle, who is now on board with the Center for AIDS. Julie, are you out there?
I am here, Brian, and I am excited to hear you talking about Thursday night. It's certainly the place to be.
Oh, my God. Did you see the thing that came out in the Chronicle today?
I missed it.
There was a write-up of an event held at John and Becca's house, John and Becca Case and Thrash.
Oh, yes, the Duran Duran.
Yeah, so apparently the phone has been ringing off the hood for people to get tickets for the schmooze. So, Julie, please tell us, what is the holiday schmooze?
You know, and I'm not surprised that the tickets are, or that the phones are going crazy right now. Holiday schmooze is, it is the most fun event that is taking place on Thursday night, benefiting the Center Parades. You know, this was started, Jackson Hicks and the famous Jackson and Company Catering. Jackson has been a supporter of the Center Parades and certainly this whole cause for so many years. And, you know, so when you pair up Jackson and you pair up a home like John and Becca Case and Thrash's house, it is sure to be the place to be, with all the money, of course, going to benefit the Center Parades. And so what a great way to schmooze with your neighbor, have the best food and wine in town, and support a cause. It's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I've never actually been to the house. I'm kind of excited. And I know a lot of people are coming just to see the house because, as you know, this is the house where the Obama fundraiser was.
That's right. They've done a great job, haven't they, really supporting you know, some of the most important events that our city has hosted.
Absolutely. So, Julie, what has been your role in kind of getting this together? How have you been helping out?
Well, you know, it's been my pleasure to serve on the board. When I, you know, being involved in HIV/AIDS in the Houston area for so many years with my professional role at AIDS Foundation Houston, when I left there and got a chance to serve on the Center Parades board, it's just been a real pleasure. And so my role's been working with Center for AIDS, working with Jackson, to be able to really just invite the community to participate in this event. John and Becca have done so much of it by opening up their home that it's been really simple to, you know, all you got to do is tell people what it is and how to be a part of it, and the whole community has really embraced it. Now, you might think that it's sold out, and it's very close to being there, but if you call the Center for AIDS in the next 24 hours, they will have a few tickets left to be able to sell, and I know that folks will want to do that if they can.
Absolutely. Now, Julie, I call you one of our community divas because you're so energetic, and you're always out there. You make me want to work harder, and I know that you've been with the AIDS Foundation Houston, and you were involved with AIDS Walk and the wonderful World AIDS Day Luncheon. What kind of motivates you to be so involved in the community?
Wow, it's been a privilege to be involved in that and to, you know, remember those that we've lost to this disease. 57% of Houstonians diagnosed with AIDS since the beginning we've lost. And so remembering so many of those places, walking, I guess, in partnership with those that are living with this disease and fighting for a day that it won't plague our community, that it won't be something that we're faced with. I think that it's something that there's still an urgency to be involved in this. And the Center for AIDS has had such an amazing history. I know Paul's here to talk about what they've done, but as being an agency that has been there to provide the most important research and information, there's a real role there. And so for Center for AIDS, this is a significant way to support the bottom line. This is a really significant way for them to impact not just our community, but across the country. So my role is to continue to raise awareness. I know, Brian, it's been one of your passions as well, and it's certainly fun to serve with you on that board.
I think we kind of inspire each other. I mean, I definitely I build off your energy, and you kind of pump me up, and I think, you know, I try to do the same, and, you know, it just keeps me going, and I, you know, there's nothing I can't, you know, if you ask me, there's nothing I wouldn't do for you, Julie. And
oh, it's mutual, and I have to tell you, Brian, you know, John and Becca have been involved in the fight against AIDS for a long time as well, here in Houston and certainly around the country, and so it was such a natural fit this year to invite them to open their home and host this event. They were so gracious to be able to do that. And if you know John and Becca, you'll know that this is a passion of theirs. And so, like I said, the most beautiful setting in town and raising funds for a much-needed cause.
Absolutely.
It's going to be great.
And they're involved with so many different causes. It's wonderful to hear that they're involved in this one that's so close to not only our communities, but, you know, our friends' hearts.
Yeah, they're real champions. They really are. And
now, what can someone, a potential guest, expect at the schmooze if they've never been before?
Well, the name kind of says a little bit, doesn't it? You get a chance to schmooze with so many folks around town. You'll see beautiful dress, beautiful surroundings, incredible food. It's short and sweet and power-packed, 2 hours of just the best holiday celebration you can imagine.
I can't imagine a better holiday celebration.
Well, I heard you've had your outfit ready for, you know, months and months. So just to come out and see Brian ready for this, gang,
yeah,
this is something to do.
I went out and got a suit, and I'm all ready, and I've been planning it. I've been scouring all the different fashion, like GQ magazines. So I'm getting a haircut. And well, I mean, when you go to the Thrash's house, you got to, you know, got to dress the part.
That's right. And, Brian, I know you're going to be joining me out front welcoming people to the Thrash's home. And so I hope if anyone's listening out there and you haven't bought your ticket yet, that you will be compelled to do so. Call the Center for AIDS tomorrow. Talk with Sarah Haynes or Gail. They'd be thrilled to get your information and give you all the details for Thursday night.
Now, Paul, can you give us the number for the center?
713-527-8219. And you can ask to speak to Sarah Haynes.
And you just call and say, I want tickets for the schmooze.
Exactly.
Now, I've been told that we're kind of almost at capacity. We're almost kind of, you know, at the limit. But, you know, if you're lucky, you can call and get those last few tickets. I'm excited. And
that's right. This will be sold out by the end of tomorrow. So definitely would urge you to do so in the morning.
And I don't know the latest amount raised, but it's very good, Julie. So I'm very impressed, and you're doing a great job. And I'm so glad that you're part of with the Center for AIDS. So I'm talking to both Julie Eberle and Paul Simmons from the Center for AIDS. And there's an event coming up on Thursday called the Holiday Schmooze. And I went last year for the first time, and I was completely blown away. I mean, it was a very well produced, very elegant event, and raised an incredible amount of money in 2 hours. And like you said, Julie, it's very short and sweet. You know, you're in, you're like, okay, la-da-da-da-da, okay, out the door. You get your little cocktails and your hors d'oeuvres, and you're in and out. So you make your impression, and then you're out the door.
And you get a schmooze with some pretty incredible folks.
You know, it's worth noting that this year, from last year's event, the schmooze won the award from National Philanthropy Day from the Houston Society of Fundraising Professionals for the best event under $250,000.
That's right. I'm sure Sarah is going to want us to say that.
I'm glad you talked about that, Paul, and that's certainly kudos to Jackson and to Randy Powers and Bill Caudill. They just superstars and made it the biggest event biggest holiday schmooze ever.
We're trying to fill those shoes. It's hard, but we're working, and with our listener support, maybe you can come out and join us and help us raise money for a wonderful cause. Now, Julie, is there anything else we should let our listeners know?
Well, you know what? I think Paul's got so many details to be able to just remind people of the important work that the center's doing and how their ticket purchase actually is really affecting so many folks. So I'm going to sign out and let them hear the most important part, and that is from Paul. And Brian, I thank you for letting this time tonight be focused on the holiday schmooze. And believe me, I can't wait to see what you're wearing.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I can't wait to see what you're going to wear. I mean,
all eyes on you, honey, and certainly all eyes on John and Becca.
We will be out there. We will be schmoozing. We'll be being the social butterflies that we are.
Awesome. And Paul, thank you for your role, and I'm excited for you to share the work that you've been doing.
Julie, thank you, and thank you for your energy and enthusiasm.
Thank you, Julie.
My pleasure.
We'll let Paul wrap up with a little bit of information about the center and kind of what we can do to kind of support the center, and what does the center do for the community?
So in addition, or if you're not able to attend this year's SMOOS, you can always make a year-end contribution to us. Again, we are a 501c3, so your contributions to the center are tax-deductible. And the programs that we offer locally are directed at people who are HIV-infected so that they can receive the necessary treatment and health information to take care of their health, while we push on a national level for improvements in treatment and, of course, ultimately a cure. And I think that sometimes the community maybe doesn't know exactly how close that we are. There are a couple of scientific hurdles that remain. We're actually closer, the scientific community is actually closer to a cure than it is to a vaccine.
That's interesting.
It is. Well, so there are a number of challenges that that confront vaccine development. But so far as we know, the challenge that confronts us now in finding a cure is in getting rid of this small population of cells that are long-lived but infected. So we're now able to treat people's HIV infection quite successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's the standard now that we try to make the virus level in the blood undetectable.
Right.
So we're able to, we now have potent, safe therapies, but there's this group of cells, it's pretty small, they're infected, and it's their job to hang around for the life of the host. So if you take somebody off medication, those cells are like embers in a fire,
mm-hmm,
and they'll rekindle the fire.
Right, right.
If we, so far as we know, that's the barrier to a cure,
mm-hmm,
and if we could find a way to get rid of those cells, we would be able to eradicate the virus.
Now, does this tie into the bone marrow kind of thing that's going on that I heard about on the internet? And
not directly. There was a, I think you're talking about the patient in Europe who, mm-hmm, appears to have been cured.
Right.
Right? So, well, at least he's more than, I think he's about 2 years out without, mm-hmm, any evidence of infection. He had a leukemia. He was irradiated, and he was given a bone marrow transplant. The donor of the bone marrow was someone who actually has a genetic mutation that makes them resistant to HIV infection.
Right, right. Those kind of genetic creatures out there that are.
That's right. It's you know, perhaps as much as 10% of the Caucasian population, mm-hmm, that actually carries that genetic mutation. So that particular approach is not viable as a large-scale public health intervention, because you can't ask all of those individuals who have those genetic mutations to be donors.
Right.
And the risk of that procedure is actually quite high. About a third of the people who undergo the particular procedure that this gentleman underwent risk death. So it's not a safe intervention for large-scale use. But it does speak to proof of concept. It tells, mm-hmm, us the general nature of what would be involved in getting the virus out of someone's body.
Very good. So we're knocking on the door, but it's the work of people like yourself in the Center for AIDS that are pushing the frontiers and kind of getting us closer to this holy grail, I guess.
Exactly. So we try to figure out what exactly are the scientific questions that need to be asked, so we can then design and carry out the research that will get us the answers.
Very good. So if you like what you hear about the Center for AIDS, please, please, please join us Thursday for the Center for AIDS' largest fundraiser, the Holiday Schmooze. Tickets are available if you buy by tomorrow by calling the Center, 713-527-8219.
That's it.
Ask for Sarah Haynes, and please join us on Thursday. Paul, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Just thank you, Brian. Thank you for this opportunity and for the work that you do for us. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate working for the Center for AIDS. It's a cause near and dear to my heart, and I appreciate the work that you do. And thank you for coming on Queer Voices.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
City Performing Arts performing live. That is actually the Bio City Women's Chorus, the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston, together at Jones Hall. And that particular song, of course, White Christmas. And coming up next on Queer Voices, Julie Eberly. And after that, more from This Way Out. This is Queer Voices.
Glenn, no. Read the script.
We just did Julie Eberly.
It's 10:20, and we've got Megan Baker.
Okay,
yes,
Baker.
Okay. With Impact Houston.
Hey, I'm dyslexic. What can I say?
It's okay.
We love you. We love you anyway.
We love you. Well,
yeah, right.
Right. After all, it's not rocket science.
That's true.
Welcome, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us, this is Impact Houston, a coalition of people working to secure full equality for GLBT community. I wanted to get it exactly the way it says right there. So what does all that mean?
Well, basically, Impact Houston came about following the November 15th protest against Proposition 8, which was kind of the result of the nationwide movement started by Join the Impact.
Yeah.
So Impact Houston is kind of like the, it's not formally affiliated with Join the Impact, but kind of our local group that's, we follow the events that Join the Impact does to have a nationwide impact and to make sure that we're all kind of working toward the same goals. And the goal of the organization here in Houston is, number one, to keep all the different organizations tied in together and kind of open the lines of communication and increase participation and activism on all levels, and then also to kind of tap into people that have not previously gotten engaged in the community or that maybe don't know what they can do to help.
Well, that was an incredible showing that day. You know, I think it surprised everyone how many people actually showed up that day on the steps of the City Hall. Was there any estimate on how many there were?
The formal estimate that I heard was over 700.
I heard 800 to 1,000.
Yeah.
It's hard to guess.
I know on the cover of this month's Outsmart magazine, mm-hmm. there's a picture on the front. It looks like an incredible crowd.
Yeah. We collected signatures just of people who volunteered to give their information for us to track, and we had 642 names, and that was with, you know, a handful of volunteers. So I'm sure there were a lot more people than that.
That's incredible.
Now, Megan, how did you get involved with this? How did you become such a political activist all of a sudden?
I've been involved in different volunteer activities and activism from a young age. When I was in high school, I volunteered with AIDS Services of the Brazos Valley in College Station.
Oh, my God. I went to A&M 92 to 97.
Okay,
so
okay.
I was probably there.
Yeah, I graduated from high school in 2000, and while I was there, I started off doing that.
Ah.
Yeah.
An Aggie kind of College Station girl.
Yeah, exactly. But then I went to UT.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And while I was at UT, I was on the board of the LBGSA, which is the Lesbian, Bisexual, Gay Students Association, and did some other things there. And I've been here in Houston for about 3 years, and I'm the outreach director of the Houston Stonewall Young Democrats.
Y'all are mobile. Man, I have to tell y'all. You'll get out there.
Yeah, so I've been involved with them for a few years, and the way that this movement came about was I have family in California, and my wife and I got married in California this past August.
So you were
great.
Directly.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, and so Proposition 8 really hit home for me, and a lot of people I know, too. It really kind of brought, even people that had never been political before, really got them interested in the movement. And I kind of stumbled upon the Join the Impact movement, the nationwide movement, and saw that they were, you know, that they're planning city protests in cities across the country. And so that's how I got involved with the Houston protest, and myself and Josh Verde and some other people. He was the main one who was already involved.
Paul Hidalgo.
Right, and Paul Hidalgo and Victor Castillo got involved, and, you know, Jerry Simoneau and Christopher Baum got involved. I mean, a lot of people kind of came together from different angles. But I just started a Facebook event, and I invited 50 of my friends.
It's amazing how that kind of just massively grew over over like a couple of days.
It really did. Yeah, I mean, it just shows you what you can do with the technology that we have today versus 30 years ago. I mean, I think that's the biggest difference in organizing.
And I think it really appeals to the younger, kind of the political people that are not, that weren't exposed to the activism of the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Are you, why are you looking at me when you say that?
I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at the wall. But it really, it's kind of the younger generation. It kind of ties them in and brings them into kind of this process and kind of gets them organized. And there's not a better way to get everybody to, at one place at one time.
Definitely. I mean, I heard some people had told us, you know, well, I'll be surprised, you know, if there's 50 people there. And, you know, we kind of knew it was going to be bigger than that because we just knew from the, you know, from the Facebook group that there were over 500 people that committed to being there.
And that's what I thought was interesting, that through Facebook, as you were saying a moment ago, Facebook it reached so many people, mm-hmm. and you sent out the 50 people and asking them to send out the 50 people,
like
of theirs, and suddenly, and suddenly you have an enormous group of people notified in a very short period of time, and this was what I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, future generations or future events take notice. This is the way to do it.
Yeah. I think we ended up having about 4,000 people that got invited. So that just shows you how quickly word can spread. And one thing that I noticed, too, that I was really impressed with was the number of straight allies that got involved, especially of the younger crowd, a lot of Rice students, a lot of U of H students. But some of the most vocal supporters, people that contacted me, a lot of them were a lot of our straight allies. And I think that's awesome that we have people that are that passionate about it that don't even have necessarily a personal stake in the movement.
Well, equality. Mm-hmm. And justice is everybody's business.
Yeah.
Not just, there are only a few reactionaries that live in, you know, we know who you are.
I really don't
feel that equality and fairness for everybody is what this country was built on. It should be for everyone.
Absolutely. I love the signs at the rally. I mean, they were very creative. And I think one of them was like, well, when do we get to vote on your right to marriage?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's that whole thing. You know, gay marriage is, you know, the worst thing that can happen to marriage in America. And my position on that is heterosexual divorce is the worst thing that can happen to marriage in America.
Absolutely. Now, Megan, I understand that there's an event coming up.
Yes, tomorrow night, Impact Houston is hosting a mixer at Salud Winery at 3939 Montrose from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And among other things, we're going to be kicking off Day Without Gays, which takes place on Wednesday.
Now, explain that, because I know a little bit about it, but I want everybody out there listening to understand what it's all about.
Okay. It's basically just other sort of groups, different ethnic groups and different movements have done this in the past, and it tends to be very successful. And the idea is that you call in gay to work, and instead of going to work, you donate your time to service, if you're able. And the other aspect of it is not contributing to the economy, so kind of a boycott on you know, spending your money and contributing to the economy to really show what an impact the GLBT community has on our larger economy and on our larger society.
Now, this is a nationwide movement?
Yes, this event is.
How's that? Because I heard about it a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. Is it good? You think the results going to be similar to what the protest was?
It's all over Facebook, and they have a website, and, you know, the events have been planned for since the protest. I mean, it's been out there.
It's not on my Facebook
well,
site.
Maybe.
And you're my friend.
I'll have to invite you.
Yeah, we got to get LinkedIn. I mean, the whole thing with this whole movement, I mean, that's another thing that kind of stemmed from Join the Impact. And this has all happened in the last few weeks, and it really is a true grassroots movement. And so it's kind of, you know, we're trying to rapidly get more people hooked in. So I don't know how the turnout will be. I know here in Houston we have, you know, 100 and something people that are committed to doing it. I think there's probably more that, again, aren't on Facebook. And
basically, if they know about it, all they need to do is do nothing that day.
Do nothing. Yeah, or do nothing.
Do not
or
contribute
do service.
To the economy mm-hmm. in any way that possible. You
right.
know, obviously some people probably have to work to feed themselves.
Right.
But they can still not spend.
Right. Not, you know, don't Christmas shop. Don't go out to lunch. Don't, you know, just those
don't
little things.
Don't fix hair. Don't fix flowers.
Right.
No.
Don't design. No, I'm sorry. I'm stereotyping.
You're stereotyping our community.
Another suggestion. This is a question posed to me. You know, what if you do have to go to work? If you do have to get your paycheck and you have to pay rent? You know, I mean, we all get that. So if you do, you know, an alternative suggestion is go to work. But, you know, send a message. You know, wear, you know, if you have some sort of GLBT-themed shirt, wear it. If not, you know, if you can, send an email to your coworkers saying, you know, today is Day Without Gays. You know, I'm
too
here.
Too bad we don't have a pin or right. We need a ribbon.
A ribbon. Right? There's a white knot.
I heard about
a white?
That.
White knot.
White knot.
Whitenot.com, K-N-O-T. That's another new thing.
It's a new symbol of our...
Gay marriage.
Our struggle mm-hmm. for gay marriage.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So you could wear your white ribbon that's tied. But yeah, just do wherever you are, do what you can to make a statement.
On Wednesday.
On
this
Wednesday.
This coming Wednesday.
Yeah, that's
okay.
on Wednesday. Yeah, and the mixer is tomorrow night, Tuesday night.
Now, how do we get in touch with you okay. or with the organization? So far we haven't even mentioned how to do that.
Definitely. If you are on Facebook, we have a Facebook group that's called Impact Houston. You can do a search. You can search for me. My name is Megan Baker. It's M-E-G-H-A-N. And I also have a new website that's http://impacthouston.wetpaint. WETPAINT.com. And I just launched that website. So I'm trying to get, I'm also, one of the other goals of this organization is to kind of get a community calendar. I know there are some out there, but not everyone
oh
is really
God.
Linked into it.
We totally need this.
Yeah.
We've
because
been doing this for years.
It's true though, because I, you know, I meet people all the mm-hmm. time that want to know, you know, when is this group meeting? When is this group meeting? And my goal personally is to just to get as many people involved in as many different organizations as possible. So, we have a calendar on there, and I welcome people to submit events that they have.
Well, that's kind of one of the things we try to do in this program, is kind of be the voice of the community and mm-hmm. kind of get the events out there. And that's why we love having someone like you, who's so active and vital in the community, to come on and talk about these events.
And send us some of that here to the show.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, we like to let people know the events going on. We have our little, you know, announcements and events and commentary that twice during the show, and you know we can't put anything on it if we don't know where it is,
and our millions of listeners will not know.
Yes,
exactly.
Both
right.
of them.
I know. No. We're on the internet. We're on podcasts. We're all over the world. I mean, people in
the. All right, what are you working on now? We've got tomorrow at Salute, mm-hmm. and then the Gay Flu Day.
Right. That's right.
After that, what do you have planned?
The next event that we have scheduled is the next protest is going to be on January 20th. And this is kind of a mandate from Join the Impact, is to do bi-monthly protests. So we had the November event, and we have another one scheduled for January 10th, 2009. And
January 10th?
2009.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Saturday. And it's going to be similar to the one in November, but again, that one came together very fast. We have more time to plan this one, so we're definitely taking suggestions on theme, on, you know, what do we want it to look like? Do we want more speakers? Do we want more informal chanting? How long should it be? So definitely, if you can make it out tomorrow, I'm going to have a box to collect suggestions then. If not, you know, find us on the web. Send your suggestions, because this is definitely a collaboration between anyone who's interested, really, and...
So this isn't a one-time thing, one protest, and we're done. We're going to keep reminding City Hall and the people in the power that we're there, and we're here, we're queer, and we want to be married.
That's right. Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, this movement had maybe lost some momentum in recent times, or at least, you know, maybe didn't have the participation that it could have. And just the idea, like you're saying, it's not like you show up once and make a statement and leave. It's the idea that, you know, we're going to continue fighting this battle until we win, which is, you know, who knows how long that will take. So the idea that we're going to keep coming out.
Yeah, I have a question, and mm-hmm. that is, okay, we're talking about gay marriage and all, and that's vitally important if you have somebody you're dating, mm-hmm. for some of us anyway. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, what are the things y'all working on? What's the goal? It's not just that, because is it DOMA? And, you know, there's a lot of mm-hmm. injustice going on The GLBT community isn't covered in any kind of protections for housing, public accommodation, or employment within this city or this state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, my mission personally is to tackle all of those things. You know, it happens at a local level, at a state level, and at a national level. And, you know, so we were talking about things locally that can be done here in Houston. And I think that that might be where we need to start. You know, it's good to talk about national issues, but I think it's equally important, if not more so, to talk about things going on here in our city and in our state. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, anything that concerns anyone in the GLBT community, anything that we think is important, I think needs to be tackled. And for me, it really is about full equality for everyone. It's not about, you know, special interests or, you know, what this group wants or what that group wants. It's really, you know, full equality.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited to hear, like, this kind of youth movement that's kind of stepping up where the other generation is left off from, you know, like the Harvey Milk generation where everything was, you know, live or die, you know. And now we're talking about gay marriage. So I'm excited that we're kind of at this point and that there's people out there pushing for this.
Oh, absolutely. Megan Baker, Impact Houston.
Give us the website one more time.
Yep.
The website is http://impacthouston.wetpaint.com.
Thank you so much for coming, and we'll be listening, and don't forget about Wednesday, which is
A Day Without Gays.
Colleen Gay.
Thank you very much. This
Thank
is Queer
you.
Voices.
Thank you, Megan.
It's that time of the year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives and further reduce your U.S. tax liability. No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
An electrifying performance by an Oscar-winning actor and a powerful collaboration of two of Hollywood's standout gay filmmakers tells the story of a camera store owner who became the first openly gay elected official in the United States. Over 30 years ago, I personally sat in the back of that camera store and interviewed the new San Francisco supervisor. Now, a much-anticipated movie is taking audiences back to that pivotal time and place in movement history. This Way Out, Steve Pride is the interviewer today, sitting with the director, the writer, and some of the cast members of Milk.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you!
A movie about Harvey Milk has been in development at Warner Brothers since 1992. Some of Hollywood's best screenwriters have churned out over 20 scripts, and over the years, Daniel Day-Lewis, Kevin Kline, Richard Gere, Kevin Spacey, James Woods, Robin Williams, and even Steve Carell were all prospective Harvey Milks. So when I heard that Gus Van Sant was in San Francisco filming Milk with Sean Penn in the title role, I was surprised it wasn't connected to the Warner Brothers project.
By the time Lance brought the script over, which was a year and 3/4 ago, almost 2 years ago, the Warner Brothers project had been in a state of somewhat dormancy because it had been 16 or so years, and it had been in and out of different incarnations, and there was a new incarnation with Bryan Singer, but he was very busy, and it was just one of those projects, like in development type of projects, that I think it only affected us in the sense of, like, you know, if we start going on it, does that make the other projects start going too? Which I think existed for us. We never really knew what was going on. We were sort of in the dark. It was very spy versus spy.
It's been 5 years since I last spoke with outrider Dustin Lance Black. But I suppose I don't have to ask what he's been up to in the meantime.
I started actually diving into the research and doing the work on the movie about 4 years ago. So that'd be about 2004. I think that's right around the time that I had a friend introduce me to Cleve Jones, And I've been wanting to tell the story for a long time, probably in some form or another, do something with the story or the message of the story since I heard it when I was like a teenage kid. Definitely after I came out, it became something I was focused on again. You know, it would just continually come up. I finally saw the documentary. That was really inspirational. And then in 2004, this buddy of mine said he wanted to do a rock opera about Cleve Jones, and I just had no idea that Cleve was even still alive. You know, so many of the leaders of that community, you know, didn't make it through the AIDS crisis in the 80s, especially those that lived in San Francisco, but Cleve did. And it didn't take more than a couple hours of hanging out with Cleve to know that there was a connection there, to hear, like, the vibrancy of the stories, to know that there was more to it than I had ever heard. There's more to Harvey than I had read or seen. And thankfully, the guy had faith in me, you know, because there was no studio, there was no money. There was my charge card, and we would head up to San Francisco, and usually like an hour out of San Francisco, he'd call Beck's Motor Lodge and say, hey, we need a place to crash. You got a couple rooms, and we would we'd do an interview at a time. And then eventually I had met the folks, and I would just start going up my own a little bit and doing those interviews and digging and trying to find people who had either worked with him, or like Art Agnos, who had ran against him, people who he had dated or rubbed, you know, shoulders with in sort of a more personal way or a family way. And so, yeah, it's years.
And what was his biggest surprise about Harvey Milk?
The people I was interviewing were cautious at first. So you were getting little pieces of information. You were slowly kind of getting access to Harvey. So there weren't like any huge aha moments because you were slowly adjusting to getting to know the man. Looking back, it's like, I don't think when I first heard his story that I would have ever assumed he was so bad at so much in his life. He had failed as a businessman. He couldn't figure out a job that he really cared about. He went from one occupation to the next. He was a passionate boyfriend and very romantic, but so closeted that I think he, you know, in a way tortured these younger guys that he dated who were kind of eager to come out and be more open. And it's basically just how flawed he was as a person. And you sort of don't know when you see some of the other stuff that's out there about him. And you kind of only get to find out if you really get to work and find things out firsthand.
Gus Van Sant filmed on location in San Francisco in the actual storefront that had been Harvey Milk's camera store in the 1970s.
When we first got to San Francisco, the city really hadn't had that many films come there because it's really hard to sort of find places to put the vehicles and the hills. It's just really a pain, and I guess that's one of the main reasons, but the locations were really quite easy compared to stuff like that. The shop, it's a gift shop called Given, and they had a mural of Harvey inside the shop. So they were very into the legacy of the store, and they were just willing to let us close their shop down, which meant, you know, not being able to sell like their things, and let us move our set in there for, I think it was, 3 weeks, and that was relatively easy. The business association on the Castro was like very supportive. Most of the people on the street were really supportive of the project. And then the rest of the city was quite easy, yeah.
Emil Hirsch plays Cleve Jones.
First and foremost thing for me was just talking to Cleve Jones. And he was extraordinarily helpful. So what we did was, you know, we would just get together, we'd go eat, we'd go drive around San Francisco, he'd show me different locations and certain the symbols of where he was, you know, the places he used to hang out, you know. And it was really fascinating hearing his stories because he has so many. And you hear some of these tales of, mischief and mayhem that he kind of went through when he was younger, and you kind of get transported to that time and place. You know, he'll say, you see down that street, you know, I was leading a crowd of 10,000 screaming drag queens at midnight 30 years ago. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Playing a historical figure while they look on had its own challenges.
I mean, there was definitely an elevated pressure in a certain sense, but at the same time, I always liked to do little things that would kind of drive him crazy. And you know, I'd just be goofy or I'd do a weird little movement, and I knew that it would bother him. he understood that, you know, he was like, listen, you know, you're doing an interpretation. You're not me. You know, it's your decision to do a lot of different things. And I went, cool. And I held him to it.
In the 1980s, Cleve Jones co-founded the San Francisco AIDS Foundation and conceived the AIDS Memorial Quilt. I ask Emil if knowing what Cleve would later accomplish impacted his portrayal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wanted to play him to where, you know, you could see potential in him, but in the beginning, you don't necessarily have to see some saint. And, you know, Cleve says, he's like, listen, I'm not a saint, you know. Cleve's a, in many ways, you know, a regular guy, a very intelligent, funny, caring guy, but, you know, I didn't want to portray Cleve as a saint. If anything, I wanted to portray him as a rebel or a kind of a renegade, kind of.
In this scene from Milk, Harvey and his team have just moved in to his new office at City Hall.
Okay, first order of business to come out of this office is a citywide gay rights ordinance, just like the one that Anita shot down in Dade County. What do you think, Lotus Blossom?
I think it's good. It's not great.
Okay, so make it brilliant. We want Anita's attention here in San Francisco. I want her to bring her fight to us. We need a unanimous vote. We need headlines.
Dan White is not going to vote for this.
Dan White will be fine. Dan White is just uneducated. He'll teach you.
Hey, Harv, committee meets at 9:30. Hey, you guys. Say, did you get the invitation to my son's christening? I invited a few of the other soups, too.
Oh, well, I'll be there.
Great. Thanks.
Are you going?
I would let him christen me if it means he's going to vote for the gay rights ordinance. We need allies.
I think he can
hear
me.
We need everyone.
Jesus.
I don't think he heard you.
Is it just me or is he cute?
There's an old saying that behind every successful man, there's a woman. In Harvey's case, it was a man named Scott Smith. In Milk, he's portrayed by the extraordinary actor, James Franco.
It was pretty amazing just being able to shoot there. What had been the center of the gay movement in the entire world. That was it. And to be doing it there, where it all happened, was very unique for me.
And Franco was not just awed by the memory of those brave activists.
Those people were like advisors on the movie, so they were there every day, like Cleve Jones and Danny Nicoletta and Frank Robinson. And some of them, you know, they're there. I think they're all in the movie. They play little cameos, not themselves, but other roles. And so they were there every day. And it was a very unique, working on that set, especially in the camera shop on Castor Street. And I remember when Frank Robinson, who was Harvey Milk's speechwriter, he also wrote the novel of The Towering Inferno, when he walked onto the set and, you know, I was sitting behind the desk and, you know, the other actors were there. And he, like, looked at me, and you could just see in his eyes, it was almost like he was being transported back. And from that moment on, he just called everybody by their character names, because those had been his friends. And it's not like he was a, you know, method actor or anything like that. It was just that he'd been, in a way, kind of transported back, and it was just almost, like, easier just to call everybody by their character names.
Diego Luna plays Harvey's last lover, Jack Lira.
I knew more about Castro area. I knew more about the movement in San Francisco, but I didn't know any of the specifics, you know. And I was there at a film festival showing my documentary, and I showed it at the Castro Theater. And I remember hearing the name, but as part of a bigger thing, you know. I never heard this story, and the first time I read the script, I was like shocked. It's a story I felt guilty. I didn't know, you know. It's an important story to know. Basically, it's important to know there was a guy that changed the life of many in those years, you know. There's a feeling that you're doing an important story because it matters to people, you know, and we could feel that around the Castro area, you know, how this man changed the life of many and how this man made that place such a free place, a happy place to be in.
We all have our time machines. Some take us back. They're called memories. Some take us forward. They're called dreams. The film Milk offers a little of both. And according to Gus Van Sant, during filming, those lines began to blur.
There was a take where we were using sort of most of the room, but the camera was pointed in one direction, and there were three or four actors in the scene, and it's at night. I think it might have been the night where Anne Cronenberg, like, gets the endorsement. And there were some people sitting in the sofa, which was outside, and during one of the takes, just somebody walked in from outside and sat down in the sofa during the shot. And after the shot was over and we yelled cut, he got up and walked out. And so the actors were like, did you see that guy? And I said, who was it? I didn't see anybody. And they said, no, somebody walked in and sat down and walked out. And I was asking him, like, what he looked like, and they kept describing Harvey. And I thought, well, maybe that was, like, the ghost of Harvey just sort of walking in for a brief second.
And if it had been Harvey in the camera store, what would Dustin Lance Black have said to him?
Oh, I mean, to Harvey, you know, I would say thank you to Harvey. Harvey, I mean, I know it sounds corny, but when I first heard his story and I was a teenager, I was really lucky that we'd been transferred out of an army base in San Antonio, Texas, and transferred up to the Bay Area, and my mom had remarried, so we were out of the Mormon church, and I was sort of able to get out of this really conservative world that I had grown up in, and super fortunate to have heard the story of Harvey Milk at a theater that I was working at. And I was very closeted. I was sort of a dark kid, you know. I was, it's not easy keeping that secret, especially in a world where, you know, in the Mormon church, it is damnation. You are taught from an early age in a conservative environment that you're less than. And to hear about even the notion of an out gay man, like, that was new. I didn't know what that was. I thought if you're gay, it's shameful, you hide it and you try to beat it down. And I didn't know that you could just sort of be out, much less be openly gay and elected to office and celebrated by people and remembered. I mean, this is, you know, a decade or more after he was assassinated that I was hearing his story. And I don't doubt that it kept me alive long enough to finally find a place where I was strong enough and comfortable enough to come out of the closet.
Harvey Milk was an ordinary man. He was not a saint. He was not a genius. His personal life was often in disarray. He died penniless. And yet, by his example and by his actions, he most certainly changed the world. We've been talking to Gus Van Sant, Dustin Lance Black, Emil Hirsch, Diego Luna, and James Franco about their new film, Milk. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Michael Lebeau, John Torres, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Sherry Lunn, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Sylvester performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to postal mail CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KALW San Francisco, California, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, WRVU Nashville, Tennessee, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
I got to go to the opening of Santaland Diaries.
Yes, how was that?
It was pretty interesting. My only complaint, and this is a personal one, is I'm so used to David Sedaris' voice. And Todd Waite. He's very good in it. He just doesn't have the same voice.
You can't criticize that.
But that's my only... I mean, and I remember hearing the original Santaland Diary that was done in NPR 10 years ago or something like that, maybe a little bit longer. And then they made a whole play out of this, like an hour. And it's very good. It's very funny. It was almost a full house, which is really fabulous to
see. It's going to be here till when?
The 28th of December.
Yeah.
Playing in the smaller theater downstairs.
Downstairs, the New House Theater.
Yes,
New
which
House
is...
Theater. Okay. Well, we're going to... I'm going to be interviewing Todd Waite for next week's show. I'm going to go down to the theater tomorrow and interview him there.
Very good.
A remote. I'm going to do it.
It'll be canned.
Queer Voices on...
On the Move.
Queer Voices on...
Hey, it's sort of fun, you know?
Absolutely.
We can take the radio to you.
That's right.
Outsmart, the new Outsmart is out. And there's lots of interesting articles in there about stuff that's going on in the community. Nancy Ford did a nice little interview about the Montrose Counseling Center and their first floor that's opened up and the meeting spaces, which sounds great. Of course, there's a nice story on the rally that was held down at City Hall.
Yeah, and there's on the cover. So if you can find it, you'll see it. It's on the cover.
And we have the handsome couple of John Palmer and Ryan Lindsay on the cover. Friends of mine, and they were out there showing their artwork. You know, John Palmer's a local artist, and he had his...
Well, like we heard a few moments ago from Megan, there were a lot of young people, a lot of our allies and friends that were there, too, the straight allies and friends.
There's something about getting in front of City Hall and just, you know, gathering and protesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not as convenient as it is in San Francisco, where they just walk. You know, people don't walk in Houston. When they sort of get mad about something in the Castro, they can just walk to City Hall and protest.
You know, as was shown in the movie Milk.
Yeah, but exactly. here you have to get a parking place and babysitters. Because one of the things is that we have families now. And we have to have babysitters, or unless we take them with us.
And there were plenty of little kids there.
Well, I think it was a great effort, you know, and it came together in such a way. It was grassroots. It was a way of our community to say, wait a second, this isn't right.
No, absolutely. And it's ongoing. I mean, she was talking about, you know, having another protest in January. So if you missed out, Jennifer and Jack.
I was out of town. Sorry.
Okay. You have another opportunity in January.
It came together so quickly, I had other plans. Believe it or not, I actually had other plans.
Well, we'd like to thank all of our guests tonight. John Wright, who called in from Dallas, who works for the Dallas Voice.
We had the lovely Colleen Fisher from the Bayou City Performing Arts.
Megan Baker from Impact Houston.
And we had our phone-in, Julie Eberly and Paul Simmons from the Center for AIDS.
And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Good night.
Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Friends, have you been partying like a holiday rock star? Making the scene at the office party, the neighborhood progressive dinner, your friend's party, your party with your girlfriend? Do you need something to relieve the party pain? Then ask yourself,
Can you pass the antacid test? The test occurs Saturday, December 20th, Dan Electro's Guitar Bar, 1031 East 24th Street, just off North Main and south of the North Loop. The antacid test is a Jerry Christmas 2, a celebration of the music of the Grateful Dead, Garcia, and inspired jams. The antacid test is a 90.1 KPFT Houston benefit concert, the cure for other holiday parties. Music will be provided by Plump, The Hightailers, Guy Schwartz, Star Jernigan, Third Ear, The Psychedillos, and many others. Nonstop relief begins at 5 p.m. The door fee is a donation to the station. The relief provided is what you need. See you Saturday, December 20th at the antacid test. It's a Dead Air production, so what could go wrong? You really want a second opinion? Then take it from these guys.
We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas and a happy Bob Weir.
Houston Blues Society warmly invites you to join us for an evening of great music and good cheer, featuring the music of Leonard Lowdown Brown on Friday, December 17th at Mr. Gino's Lounge, 7306 Cullen Boulevard. Doors open at 8, music starts at 9. For more information, please visit our website, HoustonBluesSociety.org. This is KPFT.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.